Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
And we are rolling along on a Tuesday. Last night concluded week one. And if you have not seen my co-host, if you're not watching on Twitch, instead you are listening on the radio, allow me to describe to you what my co-host Paul Gallant looks like. Now, keep in mind, Paul worked in Seattle for 2 years. He loves to make fun of Russell Wilson, and since Russell Wilson was in a three-piece suit last night, today, that's how we find Paul Gallant, a three-piece suit, a bow tie, an Astros pocket square, and some aviator sunglasses.
Hi, don't Paul. I look dandy?
I mean, I would say you look a certain type of way.
Like a dork?
In a literal tuxedo. The best comment we got on Twitch from somebody that could see you was that they said you look like you are going to a jazz concert.
My favorite was somebody who said I look like an overpaid wedding DJ.
Yeah.
See, I was getting like homecoming dance chaperone vibes.
Oh, chaperone?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Do I look that old now?
Well.
No, it's just that there's something about the bow tie, I think.
It is the bow tie. It is 100% the bow tie.
My bow tie, real. Russell Wilson's bow tie? I can't say.
Clip-on?
I think it's a clip-on.
He needed another outfit because after they lost, the fact that he was wearing a prom outfit at the podium was really difficult to come to terms with.
It's the same thing that Cam Newton had to deal with forever. These guys should pack win post-game
Correct.
Outfit, lost post-game Correct. Outfit, maybe even a tie post-game outfit.
Russ was insufferable really from the very beginning of the week. He tweeted, "Rip to the Queen." He went in the middle of the field and did his visualization prayer with his arms wide open as he spun around, which
on
was really obnoxious.
On the soul line.
But ultimately, the decision to kick the field goal by Nathaniel Hackett, his first game as a head coach, was viewed as cowardly, viewed as a lot of things. I want to get everybody's reaction, including yours, if you want to call into the show. But first, let's hear from Nathaniel Hackett on that decision.
Yeah, 4th and 6. For me, during that time, we had been just moving it slightly. They weren't moving it with big chunks. I think we had just given up a sack right before that. So wanted to be sure that we took a chance when we had a chance. And I felt confident in him.
I don't think you felt confident in Russell Wilson. He's saying he felt confident in Brandon McManus. McManus has got an absolute howitzer of a leg. But this is what you brought Russell Wilson here for. You don't have Drew Lock anymore. You don't have Teddy Bridgewater. You don't have a smorgasbord of bad quarterbacks that we have seen in Denver since Peyton Manning stopped being the Peyton Manning we once remembered. They have had a lot of wretched quarterbacks, and you're a first-time head coach. You are saying to Russell Wilson that this is a partnership where you both have equal input on what this team does. And yet, 3rd and goal to go, you decide to run the football. Fumble. 4th and goal to go. You decide to run the football. Fumble. 4th and 6 with 51 seconds. All 3 of your timeouts left. Instead of going for the first down, despite having the Seahawks defense on the ropes, you chose to kick a field goal. Where is the trust in Russell Wilson? What's the point of paying him $245 million like they did this offseason if the way that they operate in the biggest moments is, yeah, we're just going to operate like any other football team that makes a conservative decision. We're going to run the football with a guy who's fumbled the ball a couple of times. That, to me, with Melvin Gordon, too, the second time they were down in the at the goal line in the 3rd quarter, come on, let Russ do something. He's mobile. He can throw the ball. What are you doing?
To me, it when you pay somebody as much as you're paying Russell Wilson, hey, let's start out at the very basics. You hope that you trust a starting quarterback in the NFL to be able to complete this game.
100%.
You also hope that if you're paying that quarterback a brand new contract worth a quarter of $1 billion or whatever it is, that you trust him as well.
Yes.
To me, the arrogance that Russell Wilson showed when he left Seattle really bubbled up in this game. Doug Baldwin Jr., Richard Sherman, Shelby Harris, we played that interview earlier that he had with James Palmer. He was part of that trade to get Russell Wilson there. The fact that so many of the guys were basically laughing at this and basically laughing at Russell Wilson, I think says a lot about how he was received in Seattle. And then you add to the fact that he thought he'd have this great partnership where he could almost help draw up the plays for this offense and have this partnership with Nathaniel Hackett. Look, I mean, they play the Texans next week, so the Broncos are probably going to get a win. But to me, this was an indication of possibly more dysfunction behind the scenes with Russell Wilson. We've talked a lot about Russ. Guys, let's talk about Geno Smith. This is somebody that people didn't even know if he would be starting. There was an audible laugh on every single network talking about the Seahawks, quote unquote, quarterback room.
I think C-hacks is an appropriate C-hacks, way to describe it.
Did I just start something? Dana Holgorsen, by the way, University of Houston, Coach Geno Smith, West Virginia, a little local tie for you. Thoughts on Geno's performance, guys?
It was an awesome first half. It reminded me of the time that Case Keenum in 2013 against the Indianapolis Colts had this ridiculous 10 of 17, 208 yards, three touchdown performance. And you're like, what is happening? What is happening? What is
going on?
I'll tell you what's going on. Geno Smith played the greatest game he'll ever play. Because then the second half happened. But he deserves a lot of credit. I mean, they finally had a quarterback execute the offense that they wanted to execute last year. Because Russell Wilson, he improvises, and what he tends to do is he throws the football deep downfield. He has incredible deep ball accuracy typically. Instead, in Geno Smith, they had a quarterback who executed the offense. Now, that's not to say that having a game manager quarterback is better than having a great quarterback. But Geno played very well, and he deserves credit for this one. I don't expect it'll happen again, though, and I don't think that Seattle should be thinking to themselves right now, oh, yeah, we're going to go to the playoffs this year. Hell no, that's not happening.
No, but it was kind of, you know, you heard Baker Mayfield saying, well, everybody treated like this was the Super Bowl. When a former quarterback who left on bad terms returns, it is especially a Super Bowl. He was met with a lot of boos, by the way. I also want to talk about the broadcast. Joe and Troy, how about that? That made that game seem so much bigger. And I think it was a big L for the crowd that said that it doesn't matter who announces a game.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I love Joe Buck. I know a lot of people hate to hear that. And I think that the combination of those two, the chemistry is impeccable. And you actually did hear it in a couple of different broadcasts this weekend. I would say specifically the Sunday Night Football broadcast with very hoarse Chris Collinsworth and Mike Tirico, which you saw twice already. Not the same kind of back and forth that Joe Buck and Troy Aikman have. And to have them on Monday Night Football, I know that I have an alternative viewing experience if I want to watch. But I'm not watching the Manning cast unless the game's gotten out of hand, or it's two teams I just don't give a crap about.
Or the broadcaster, because one of the reasons so many people watched the Manning cast last year, including we talked about this as well, is because we couldn't stand ESPN's broadcast. And now that you actually like ESPN's broadcast, because Lisa Salter is a pro, Troy and Joe, you know, they've been together for like 21 years. That was interesting for sure, and I thought that was a good element of the game. But there was an alternative broadcast.
Yes.
And it did feature former Colts/Broncos great Peyton
Broncos
Manning.
Broncos great. He didn't play for the Colts, did he?
He might have played for the Colts.
I don't remember
Broncos/Colts.
Yeah.
Get Broncos first.
Put the slash where it matters and put the teams where they should be.
Well, he won his last championship with the Broncos. He set the all-time passing record with the Broncos. So he's a Bronco Hall of
Famer.
Well, you know what?
He had neck issues, so whatever.
Yeah, and the Colts decided instead of, you know, trying to pay his medical bills and rehab him, they're like, all right, you're fired.
At the time, it was the right decision. But there was an alternative broadcast featuring Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, and at the time when this happened, I believe Shannon Sharpe was with them. There were, what, two or three timeouts left? And Peyton Manning was begging Nathaniel Hackett to take a timeout.
We got three timeouts, E. I might use one right here, E. Let's use one. Let's talk about this one. They're going to try to draw, him off sides. Might try to draw him off sides, E.
You don't have that much
dummy
time.
Snap count.
You don't want to waste that much time, I don't think.
Yeah. I think we should call timeout, like, now.
They're running a play. They look unsettled. Sutton doesn't know what he's doing. Hurry up. Timeout.
You can hear that. Timeout.
I felt the same way. I can't believe that they just let the clock continue to run. They had
three timeouts
and 50 seconds. I mean, look, if you miss the field goal, you're not in good shape, right? Because if they get the ball back there and you'd called, I don't know, you just kick the field goal with, like, I'd say 40 seconds left or something like that. You miss it. At the very least, the Seahawks have to get a first down to win. Also, if you go for it on fourth and six, the Seahawks still have to get a first down to win. Now, you're probably going to end up with a ball at your own one, given what Michael Dixon is as a punter. But what's the best situation here? One-point game to try and kick a 58-yard field goal or give the ball to Russell Wilson with a Seahawks defense that only stopped Denver once all game from a forcing them to punt perspective. Like, Denver moved the ball pretty well over the course of this one. They were running the ball at ease. And I know that things obviously were horrible for the Broncos in the red zone. It's crazy the way they handled it, both from the time management side of things and from the just, okay, make up your mind here. Do you want the win? Do you feel like you have a really good chance at a 64-yard field goal? Or do you want to give the guy who you paid $245 million the opportunity?
They kept saying, let Russ cook.
Yeah.
All offseason.
Russ said it. Russ
and
thinks he was going to cook.
They did not let him in the kitchen to cook. Interesting NFL game, and there were a lot of interesting college games over the weekend as well. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, our college six-pack. That's next.
ESPN 97.5.
In 1930, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, in an effort to
alleviate
the effects of the...
Time to put down the books and crack open a college football six-pack.
We're going streaking through the quad and into the gymnasium. Come on, everybody!
With Vanessa and Gallant.
Let's do it.
This is sick.
Are we on Fox? I like it.
We don't like hurt quarterbacks, unfortunately. It is time, as you heard, for our college six-pack. And we start with an update on Quinn Ewers. Day-to-day is the last we got from Steve Sarkisian, if I'm not mistaken. I tried to Google this. Our UT expert, Sean Mapes.
Yeah, at his press conference yesterday, Steve Sarkisian said day-to-day, but he also said day-to-day with basically everyone
Bijan
who was
Robinson,
hurt.
Robinson, as well as Deshaun Jameson and Hudson Card.
Yeah, so everyone's day-to-day, which leads me to believe, I think that the either Pete Thamel or Bruce Feldman report of basically at least 2 to 3 weeks. Thamel said 4 to 6, I want to say, and Feldman said at least 2 or 3.
So it's a bummer. He was great in that first quarter.
Yeah, he was absolutely awesome. Now, he was just executing the script that they script out before the game starts, but it still was very encouraging in that short sample.
On October 8th against Oklahoma, yay or nay, will he be on the field for the Horns?
That's definitely the you
hope.
Need him by that. So I'll just be optimistic and I'll say yes.
I'll say no.
Because I've seen nothing really concrete about it, and that is around the time, both timelines, he should come back. So
I think if you're him, you're going to force your way back onto the field as soon as you possibly can.
Like Drew Brees said, shoot that thing up.
Yeah, seriously. This is your year. I mean, do you feel 100% confident with Arch Manning coming into Austin next year that you're still going to have that job? This is your opportunity to potentially put on tape that you could be drafted as a quarterback in the NFL. And I got to say, what I saw from him in those 12 throws that he had against Alabama, I mean, I think he could play on Sundays, but I obviously need to see a lot more. That was a hell of a performance by him.
Which is crazy because he's basically a true freshman. Because he left high school a year early, went to Ohio State.
That's a great
and redshirted.
Point. All right, so Scott Frost fired from Nebraska. They paid his $15 million buyout. It was $7.5 million more than it would have been if they waited another 3 weeks. But they needed him gone. He needs to update his Twitter bio, by the way. It still says head coach for Husker Football Nation. Awkward.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be logging on Twitter anytime soon. The Scott Frost era was a disaster. I think someone put together just a compilation of all of the areas where Nebraska has struggled over the last couple of years. There's a part of me that feels bad for him. Because this is a Nebraska legend, and now he's a failed Nebraska head coach. And generally, you get remembered for what you did last.
Yeah.
And I think the memories of what he was as a player for Nebraska are somewhat fading away, just given how now Nebraska is a bit of an afterthought.
Not every great player needs to coach.
I agree with you there. But it's crazy because of how good he was at Central Florida. That it went this poorly in his own backyard is really something else. And who was their last coach? Was it Bo Pelini?
It was Bo Pelini, then it was Mike Riley.
Okay. Pelini, at the very least, had them relevant.
Yes.
I mean, he wasn't a great coach, but they were winning 8-9 a year. With Scott Frost, they've been struggling to get to 500.
Yeah, Scott Frost, in his 2 years at UCF in 16 and 17, won 19 games. In his 4 years and one, or in 3 games, he won 16 in Nebraska. Not great.
Not great, Bob. Not great. Scott Frost is out at Nebraska. Some local news. Baylor lost to BYU in overtime, 26-20, late on Saturday.
Yes. That was a bummer for Baylor.
Yeah, I like Dave Aranda. Is it Aranda? Aranda?
Aranda.
I like Dave
Tuckerius
Aranda a lot.
It's Dave Aranda.
Okay, thank you.
I like that differential.
You know what? You laughed. I will remember it now.
I will not remember that, but I appreciate you. Look, this is, I think, going to hurt. I saw someone at the Texas-Alabama game wearing Baylor stuff to the game, and I got annoyed, just like I was annoyed that one time when I was at Chili's talking with a friend about Alabama, and this person decided to bring up, like, hey, man, I went to Baylor, and we all said, no one cares. This is the most Baylor thing that's ever happened. But if they were able to win this game and go into conference play undefeated, I mean, you're thinking that they've got a chance to make it all the way to the college football playoff like Desmond Howard predicted. This is going to hurt him. I think ultimately now it's
Desmond
okay,
Howard
can
predicted
you win the
a
Big
lot
12?
Of things, by the way. He also predicted Pitt.
A&M?
He predicted A&M, who lost to Appalachian State last week.
Michigan.
Which makes sense. He's an alum.
Who's good. But he also, Baylor, who lost, and Pitt, who lost to Tennessee.
But then he chose Pitt to lose to Tennessee.
Yes, on game day.
On game day.
He had a change of heart.
Because it all makes sense.
Yeah.
LSU dominated Southern 65-17. They host Mississippi State next.
So I think when it comes to LSU,
my family,
after what happened against Florida State, you're just hoping that they can incrementally make steps over the course of the season to not be dum-dums. Because that's been their big problem over all these years, is that they are undisciplined when it matters most. Talent is never an issue there. It's nice to bounce back with a big-time win. But now, okay, you go into SEC West play. Mississippi State's not, you know, the Dak Prescott Mississippi State team of the past. But I feel like all you're looking for with LSU this year is just to stop being dummies. That's all I'm hoping for. I did not have the biggest expectations. But that loss to Florida State, it's not like Florida State's back or anything. Florida State's going to be a middling team, too.
How do we feel about Texas A&M's quarterback change? And do you guys think one Jimbo Fisher is going to give up play calling duties? We're talking about the Aggies now. No, not the Aggie Yell, the actual football team.
I at the very least, bench Haynes King. Good God, that guy's terrible.
You said this from the very beginning.
I said this against Sam Houston State. And it's always weird in that week one game where the final score is what it is. But, I mean, he's got a hitch in his throw. He's thrown multiple passes into traffic in that game. He was trying to throw interceptions. So then in this game, it's like he did the exact opposite, where he got so conservative. How do you throw 20 passes for 93 yards when you have all of the speed that you have with the Aggies? How is that it? I mean, Appalachian State is a D1 program, but like Sam Houston State, if it gets into a track meet, you're going to run away from them, and it's like not even going to be close. I can't believe that they were this bad this past week, and they have better alternatives behind them.
When you look, go ahead, Sean.
Especially with that offense, with the receiver talent that they have, Anaya Smith and Evan Stewart, that you can't have more. They had one explosive play or play that's deemed explosive. It was a 19-yard pass play. That was
the
most explosive play they had on offense.
And the contract that Jimbo got, and when you have the athletic budget that they have, you cannot lose to Appalachian State.
No.
In year five. It's not like he's taking over
right.
Just now. It's year five.
All right, the Cougs. Losing in overtime to Texas Tech. I could take the Cardiac Cougs week one. It was a fun game. Opening week, maybe a little bit of rust, UTSA. And look, I don't mean to disrespect Texas Tech. Shout out to Cody Suits, Texas Tech alum. I don't know. Two close games in a row.
they're not going to get to the 11 wins this year, which is a bummer. I think they thought that they had a chance at that. I think the big problem right now, and you know, with going up against Texas Tech, like you got to be able to stop a team like that from time to time, or not find yourself in a two-score hole. Like that's the big problem, is they continuously find themselves in these deficits. And okay, you're going to play a pretty easy schedule leading all the way up to Cincinnati the rest of the year. How are you going to do against Cincinnati? I guess you just got to wait until then. But very disappointing, because they had a big time opportunity to maybe not make the college football playoff, but at the very least to have one of those years where you can, like Central Florida, claim that you're the you're the national champions by being undefeated and not having made it to the college football playoff.
We have a little coup giveaway, by the way.
We do have a coup giveaway. That is correct. We are giving away a pair of tickets to UH against undefeated Kansas.
Ooh.
Caller 3 to 713-780-3776. You get free tickets to this future Big 12 matchup. Ooh.
There you go.
Can call 713-GO-COUGS. Go to uhcougars.com/tickets to buy tickets. Come early, be loud, and wear red. And Cougs get a stop in 4th and 20, as pointed out on the Twitch by OTR, or excuse me, by Waka Flocka Books. I agree with you. There you go.
All right, Field Yates just tweeted something out. I do want to touch on this quickly, because I don't think we're going to have time to in the next segment. The Browns have a new midfield logo, by the way.
Yeah, it's like...
It was a helmet. It was a basic orange helmet. They've had the same one for years. This one, he tweeted it out, Paul. I actually thought it was a joke. I showed it to you, and it's real.
It's a logo that I've seen before.
Oh.
The Browns have this as an alternative logo. It's this weird-looking elf. I've never understood why they have a little elf fetish going on.
I've seen him on, like, vintage apparel, but I haven't seen him on anything in years.
Yeah.
Brownie the Elf is the new logo.
Old Brownie the Elf. He's very reminiscent. Have you ever watched Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the claymation from back in the day featuring Burl Ives? Okay. So he reminds me of Herbie the Elf. Herbie the sexually ambidextrous elf who wants to be a dentist. And, you know, why am I such a misfit? Well, the Broncos are misfits, so I mean, I suppose it's on brand just given the way that their offseason has gone. It's a weird thing to put it at midfield. You've always had the helmet. What's wrong with the helmet? This logo's confusing.
It's very confusing. I don't know if they're trying to distract from possibly a situation that made a lot of headlines when they brought in a certain quarterback in the offseason. But yeah, I thought it was a joke. It is not a joke. Also reminiscent kind of the Keebler elf, if you ask me.
Yeah, definitely the Keebler elf. And by the way, Keebler overrated.
Oh, really?
You know what
bothered
me?
Oh, yeah, the cookies. Yeah, they're dry.
The Vienna fingers used to be like the alternative that I would get when I couldn't find Cameos at the grocery store, and now they have the golden Oreos.
Yeah.
Cameos you can only find in Puerto Rico, which is another travesty when it comes to cookies. I'm a big cookie guy. But the Vienna fingers have like the worst cracker on the outside of them, and I blame those little bastard Keebler elves.
Oh.
I want to set their trees on fire.
Paul hates elves. Now you know. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to talk about some of the mistakes made on Sunday and Lovey's reaction to them. But first, let me tell you about my friends at TGS Insurance. They're saving our folks money. People know they're overpaying, so they text money to 232323. They get their instant quote, and they start saving a lot of money. Here's a few of our listeners who have saved big time on their home insurance this past week. Gerald and Cypress, $600. Caesar and Katie, $1,200. Robbie in North Houston saved $1,900 on his home insurance. From inside the loop to the suburbs, everybody's out here saving cash. All you do is text the word money to 232323. What happens is their system asks for your home address. You send it back and boom, baby, you got it. Simple, fast, easy, big savings. Are you going to make our weekly leaderboard once again? Do it. Text money 232323. Get your home insurance quote and start saving big today.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, we're rolling along on a Tuesday. We are now 2 days removed from the very odd ending to the Texans-Colts game, which ended, of course, in a tie at 20. It was the first tie in Texans franchise history, the first one for the Colts, I believe, in over 40 years. Paul and I were both in the press box. Disappointing, to say the least, after the Texans had a 23 20-3 lead, I should say, in that fourth quarter. And then they allowed the Matty Ice-led Colts to come back. Paul, you were at a press conference yesterday with Lovie Smith.
Right.
And had a little bit of an interaction with him.
I wanted to get some answers about the field goal attempt that they passed on, choosing to punt in the fourth quarter. But I want to give credit where credit's due. Football coaches are very stubborn by nature. And when pressed about decisions that they make, very often they will double down. Now, Lovie Smith did do that yesterday. You'll hear the exchange I had with him in a bit. And he also, when asked about punting at the end of overtime, giving the ball back to the Colts, essentially saying, we're going for the tie. When that took place, there was a lot of criticism. He stood by those decisions yesterday. But there were multiple points in his press conference where he did admit that he made a mistake. First off, in his opening statement, here is Lovie Smith talking about a guy that wasn't used very often on Sunday.
I understand how many plays Damon Pierce played. The plan, of course, was for him to get more. You get into the game and situations make you go a little bit different direction. But you learn from those mistakes like that, mistakes of those situations that we you look at the day after a little bit.
He said it was a mistake.
It was a mistake not to use Damian Pierce, the guy that garnered national attention from some of the biggest Texans haters, by the way. The guy that people added to their fantasy rosters. Yeah, it was a mistake. And I will say this, credit to Lovie for the mistake. For admitting, not for the mistake. Credit to Lovie for basically saying, you know what, y'all were right. We never heard that from Bill O'Brien.
No.
David Culley, I think I've blacked out part of the David Culley experience. Romeo Crennel before him, Romeo was just kind of the like fun grandpa that you... This is the first Texans coach. This is the fourth I've covered since I've been here, and I've been here 3 years, by the way. This is the first Texans coach that I have heard in an intelligent way say, you guys were right, I messed up.
O'Brien would have said that's the decision that was in the best interests of the team. And
doesn't matter, Brian. AFC champions, South champions.
The coaches generally go to that line whenever they're pressed on something that they did. But a little bit later in the press conference, Lovie Smith again brought up...
Was this your question?
Not yet. Okay. We'll get to it eventually. Multiple times in this press conference, Lovie Smith brought up that Damian Pierce had to have been used more, that it was a mistake not to give him the ball more.
You just look, I can't defend the amount of reps our starting tailback got in some of those situations. I wish he had gotten more. And we're going to work to get him more of those opportunities. But a young back, it's some of those things. I wouldn't say that just being a primary ball carrier is holding him back. But those are just some things that we're going to work on to make sure that that situation doesn't happen again.
So multiple times you hear Lovie Smith bring up that they wanted to use Damian Pierce more. Here's a follow-up question to that. I do feel like it's big of him to say that, yeah, we should have done it more, admitting a mistake and not pointing the finger at anybody. But do you think he was subtly pointing the finger at anybody? Do you think that maybe he was pointing at Pep Hamilton and saying, like, look, Pep, come on, man.
It's possible, but those two have a good relationship. I think maybe sometimes the wording, we overanalyze the wording, and then when we get the transcripts back, when you look at the wording, sometimes it can appear like someone's accusing someone. I don't know that he was, but yeah, he's a defensive-minded head coach. I think all offensive decisions, most of them he's going to collaborate with Pep Hamilton on. We saw Pep in Indianapolis. I mean, we've seen Pep in several stops. Some of these mistakes we've seen before.
As this press conference continued, Vanessa, Lovie Smith, he was the subject of my ire for a decision that took place on Sunday, not punting at the end of overtime, but you got the ball up 20-3 at the Colts' 36-37 yard line. I felt like the game changed when instead of kicking a field goal there within Kyeemy Fairbairn's range, they punt, Colts get a field goal on the following drive.
Were you more mad about that than the decision
yes.
at the end?
100%. That is where the game changed. And you have in Kyeemy Fairbairn, at least to me, a kicker who's pretty damn good. Maybe he's not the same guy that he used to be. More on that in a second. But I brought up the statistics of Kyeemy Fairbairn, 18 of 28 from 50-plus. Shout out to Jeremy Branham for providing those statistics on Twitter yesterday of the Killer Bees coming up next right here, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. And I said, hey, he kicked a 61-yard field goal last year too. Do you stand by your decision to punt instead of let Kyeemy kick? Here is what Lovey had to say.
I absolutely feel the same way about that. I realize exactly how far it was also. At the time, we weren't going to kick field goal at the 37-yard line. So taking the 5-yard penalty then, that was insignificant there. We had made up our mind for that. In that situation, we like to pin them down there and play defense is what. You know, a similar situation last year against New England, and we went a different direction. So that was a base part of the plan then. As we go forward, right at that area, sometimes we may kick it, sometimes we may not. But thanks for you quoting what he's done in the past. I appreciate you looking all that up.
That was the question I asked, and that was Lovie Smith, who I don't think enjoyed the fact that I brought up that Kyeemy Fairbairn's 18 of 28 from 50-plus, and on top of that, that Kyeemy Fairbairn kicked a 61-yard field goal last year. Doesn't sound like Lovie Smith has the most faith in Fairbairn, and when you add in that Fairbairn wasn't at his locker room at the end of the Texans tie with the Colts, you wonder how he's feeling. I mean, I know he missed some time at the end of last year. I know he's missed some time in the preseason with injuries before. Maybe they're feeling he's not 100% or something like that. Maybe they just don't have full trust in him. You would think they would, though. It was surprising that they chose not to kick a field goal in that spot when I thought they had a weapon in Fairbairn, given what he's done the last couple of seasons.
Probably not happy. He's probably not happy with Levy's decision on that.
100%. And look, why would you be? He has no faith in you. He doesn't believe in you based off of the actions that he made. So that was an interesting point because I thought that maybe if I brought up those numbers that he would say, well, it's something we'll consider in the future. But he said, no, yeah, we weren't really feeling it.
And in your limited exposure with Lovie Smith, Paul, this is a press conference style question to you. How do you feel? How would you compare your relationship so far with Lovie Smith to the previous Texans head coach that you covered, Bill O'Brien?
Oh, that's funny.
Well, and fellow Bostonian.
What I wanted to do when Lovie came back saying, like, I appreciate you having those numbers, I wanted to say, well, the last head coach that was here when I was here would have yelled at me for not having those numbers in front of me. Because he brought that up multiple times in press conferences. Like he would, if you made a mistake while asking a question, he would deflect from the actual question itself. So first couple of questions to Lovie Smith after a tie. I feel like we're not off to a great start, but we can build on it. You know, just like the Texans can build off of a tie against
the
Colts.
There are some not great questions asked to Lovie Smith.
You are very right.
And I don't want to criticize who is allowed in the room to ask questions because that is the Texans PR staff's MO, their responsibility. They get to make that decision. But there is a wide-ranging number of media people, and the questions sometimes are odd. And the questions are sometimes not conducive to moving forward, analyzing offenses, analyzing a team. And instead, you have 75 questions about a decision made at the end of the game, which he has addressed ad nauseum. I get it.
Do you think that people should have moved on after the way he addressed them on Sunday?
Yes. No, well, no, not on Sunday, because you have Monday, and Monday is not, you know, if you've covered an NFL team before, which you have, but I'm just telling our listeners, like,
yeah.
early in the week, you do still tend to talk about Sunday's game. It was Monday. But at a certain point after it's been asked on Monday, yeah, you move on. You talk about some of the specific plays. You talk about any injuries that might happen, any guys that looked great during training camp but that we didn't really see on the field, and you move on to other topics. There wasn't a lot of other topics.
No, not really. And I mean, it really.
So I get Lovie's like, hey, let's move on to Denver. Let's talk about other things.
Yesterday's press conference was about punting and Dameon Pierce.
Which he had talked about ad nauseum on Sunday.
Right, he did. And I think that against Denver, we'll see Dameon Pierce. Will we see a team that's moved on from a coach that chose to tie instead of go for the win? That remains to be seen. I'm not 100% sure on that front.
All right, coming up, a major deal in the NBA just happened, a major announcement made per Woj. You're going to want to hear that. Plus, of course, our Garbage Time segment. That's next.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, some breaking news coming from Woj, a little Woj bomb. Suns owner Robert Sarver has been suspended a full year and fined $10 million by the NBA as a result of the league's investigation into allegations of racism and misogyny. Worth noting, I don't remember the last time an owner was suspended for a whole year.
I can't either. And I
in
think
any league, by the way.
I think it's always funny, though, when an owner gets suspended. Like, what does that even mean? You still have control over the team. Do you not get to make the revenue that you
know.
Earn from
Maybe
the profits?
Maybe one of his kids has to run the team?
I know what they've done technically with the Washington Commanders is that Daniel Snyder's wife was technically running the show, is still running the show, but no one actually believes it. I think the NBA is a little bit more strict on that front. But yeah, the only thing that's close to this was when Donald Sterling essentially got kicked out of the league for being racist, as opposed to being or forced to sell the team because he's racist, as opposed to, you know, this situation where it's a year-long suspension.
Was it similar with Jerry Richardson where he kind of got pushed to the side after that, or was he going to sell anyway?
I don't know if he was going to sell anyway, but it definitely felt like the NFL shoved him into making
or
that decision.
It felt like it was something where he didn't want to fight it, so instead of like fighting it, he was like, you know what, I'll just sell instead of, you know, having to do all this. Like, I'll just leave and take $2 billion.
Yeah.
I feel like this doesn't change anything. I mean, what, he's going to change his habits because of things that have taken place? Like, he's still there.
Yeah. No, he can change. He's a 70-year-old man
you know
or however old he is.
If you can change, we can all change. Mm-hmm. As Rocky said in Rocky IV after beating Ivan Drago and ended the Cold War officially. People say it was Gorbachev. It was Rocky.
Speaking of changes, the Browns, we touched on this earlier, but their new logo is getting a lot of attention. Their Brownie the Elf will now replace the orange helmet that was in the middle of the field. What do you guys think the strategy was here?
To deflect as much as they possibly can from the fact that they traded for a predator and gave him a giant contract.
You think an elf is going to help with that?
I mean, it's pretty distracting, right? It's a giant elf on the field now.
Yeah.
Also, a giant elf. That's ironic. No? Elves are supposed to be small. Unless we're talking
Although
about Lord of the Rings elves.
You are an elf hater, as you said.
Oh, yeah.
In the last segment.
You know, they're pointy ears, these bastards. You know? Always
right.
Keeping the dwarves down.
It is time for garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
This coming from KSAT in San Antonio. The San Antonio police arrested a man with outstanding warrants after he was found shot in the buttocks. But it gets better. The 31-year-old man apparently had fired shots in the air, and they came down and hit him in the buttocks.
Oh, wow. They came straight down.
Yeah. I don't know how that works.
He's fortunate it hit him straight in the buttocks.
And apparently, like, if it hits you in the butt but not your head, like, I mean, chances are he's got a pretty big butt.
Single gunshot wound to the buttock.
Fleshy part of the thigh. Officers. It's one of my favorite episodes of The Sopranos where Bobby Bacala talks to this rapper who wants to have his records blow up. And he says, like, I just don't have the street cred. And Bobby says, like, well, at some point I'll just shoot you in the fleshy part of the thigh. And when this rapper is walking outside of a convenience store, Bobby comes up behind him and shoots him in the ass. Honestly, that would probably make you look worse as far as
you
your
street
cred
Sopranos?
Goes.
You said this is Sopranos?
Yeah.
I still need to see it.
You got to.
Yeah, because if you get shot in the butt, I mean, my only reference point for getting shot in the butt is Forrest Gump. So I imagine you just lay on your stomach in the hospital eating ice cream.
At least it's the...
I got shot in the butt top.
Fleshiest part of the...
Lieutenant Dan, ice cream.
I'll love you, Jen A. Ray J the rapper, is on a mission to clear his name. He says that Kris Jenner is the one, the momager, who controlled their infamous sex tape.
I mean,
Kim Kardashian.
No doubt about it. I feel like anyone who is on the side of Kris Jenner is on the side of duplicitous, manipulative, Littlefinger-esque characters. What's interesting is they've been putting out a lot of things about how, like, Ray J is the one who released the actual tape. And Ray J is like, no. And one of the ways that they've tried to prove that Ray J is the one who released the tape is, like, by putting out, like, terrible polygraph tests. Polygraph tests are BS. Do people buy into a polygraph test?
People need to be like me and watch Dateline and 48 Hours, and you will know that polygraph tests do not always work. In fact, they're usually not admissible in most courts. Thank you.
Yeah, they don't measure if you're lying. They measure if you believe you're lying,
right.
I think. And it really is just like heart rate and
I was going to say, if you're somebody that can make yourself zen and calm yourself, you're going to pass a lie detector test.
Good to know.
There you go.
For example, Russell Wilson would probably pass a polygraph test. Because Russell Wilson's, like, big into this idea of neutral thinking. And when you hear him speak, I mean, do you feel like he believes everything he says? I actually do think he believes everything he says.
I think he is remarkably genuine, but how he is genuine is in the most ingenuine way. It's like he's the most ingenuine person, but that is who he is.
It's like correct. I have always said I do think Russ is being himself.
Yeah.
I don't think he's having to try.
No.
Did you feel like J.J. Watt was a little bit more of a cornball in a way because he was almost trying to be something he wasn't for a while here in Houston?
He was definitely, like, amplifying
right.
who he was. Like, he was playing up the, like, aspects that were getting played up anyway, I feel like, with J.J.
That makes sense.
Yeah, if you're...
And because he dialed it back. Like, that itself proved that he, like, was kind of, like, you know, manipulating a little bit.
It took time, though, for him to see it. I think he had to have other people make fun of him and him to actually...
Barstool started really getting on him.
Pardon My Take had him on for an interview. I don't think he knew
right.
what was going on. And they basically were saying, like, you're trying too hard. And I don't think JJ realized it until someone said, like, this is why we're making fun of you.
Like, said it to his face.
And Pardon My Take kind of pulled back on it afterwards. But I feel like J.J. Watt has been relatively more of a real person since then. He still had some corny moments, but I think he's a little bit more authentic with it now.
The rattlesnake in his house thing, you know.
That's believable.
Yeah.
If I saw a rattlesnake, I don't care how big you are. It's a bleeping rattlesnake.
But it
was more about, like, also just, like, posting the Ted Lasso quotes and, like, everything. He had a reference of The Office. I liked J.J. a lot, but... it was a little much. Russ, I think, is actually real corny. JJ is fake corny.
Yeah, I think JJ is kind of like a goofy guy. Like, he knows he's not like a cool guy, but he had to like play it up when he was like winning Defensive Player of the Year every year.
Long live the Queen, guys. Mourners gathered to celebrate Queen Elizabeth. Yeah,
she did live a long time.
She can't live anymore.
96 years. There was a lot of tension among, I believe it's William and Harry and their wives after, as we know, Harry and Meghan did the sit-down interview with Oprah. Those two, according to tabloids, have not spoken since. It was very awkward. A particular clip went viral where Harry opened the door for Meghan, but William did not open the door for Kate. Just FYI.
No door opening? That's not good.
Their Uncle Andrew was also heckled. Pretty incessantly.
Good.
He obviously had that relationship with Jeffrey Epstein that has been criticized, rightfully so.
He got arrested for heckling him. Imagine living in a country where you can get arrested for heckling somebody. Yeah, it happened at a funeral. I think it's warranted heckling. The guy's a friend of the Epsteins.
I think you could get arrested for heckling in America, too.
I mean,
Wait, can you?
I don't think so.
Isn't it like freedom of speech or something that we have over
but
here?
But aren't you disturbing the peace?
But... Are you disturbing the peace?
I think it depends on who you're heckling and who you are.
Like the queen, because it was the queen.
Yes, I think if you heckle, like, the president, they handle you.
I don't think so. I mean, as long as it's, like, within bounds. Maybe there's a certain line that you can't cross.
Right, to protest.
But I'm pretty sure that you easily have the ability to do this. And in England, it's different, you know?
I'm just saying, I think the police get called in America for a lot of things.
true.
People get arrested for a lot of things.
Robert Griffin III has been making a lot of appearances on ESPN, whether it's Monday Night Countdown or some of their different shows. He had an idea last night to race the Seahawks live mascot. Is it Time of the Hawk?
Something like that.
Extraordinary pregame bit that actually was pretty entertaining.
I can't believe that they got the bird to go in a straight line.
They had the trainer there,
yeah.
The zoologist lady.
They did.
It was one of the funnier pregame bits I've seen. I will say this. There's a lot of corny things on pregame shows nationally. This was funny.
Well, speaking of corny, Robert Griffin III afterwards said, like, yeah, the Cowboys just gave me a call.
Yeah, yeah, well.
Yeah, take it easy with talking about corniness and Robert Griffin III. Some people have gotten in trouble before with that.
Oh, yeah. I'm not Rob Parker. Don't worry.
Yeah. But I do think that Robert Griffin III, every Monday night, should have to race the mascot. Whatever the team is that he has to
it's
race.
It's not a terrible idea. It's
Colts,
a long
he has to race a
show.
Horse.
Yeah, a Bronco. Got to race a Bronco.
Let's ride.
Jaguar has to race a Jaguar.
Yes.
Oh, an actual
Texan has to race a track star.
He has to race a baby Colt, an actual Jaguar, an actual Bronco, whatever
Commander.
Game he's doing.
A 49er.
He'd have to race against an old Pentagon official.
Get an old general or something.
What live mascot do you think you could win a race against?
I mean, all of them.
What is a Packer? How would he race a Packer?
You'd probably have to have like a Laverne and Shirley. You'd have to like pack meat into a box as quickly as you possibly can. Like they're packing chocolates.
Or maybe that's
I Love Lucy.
I Love Lucy.
I think I could beat a Viking.
Yeah.
In a race. Foot race.
Well, he's going to be armored, so like you would think so.
And they're burly.
He's got chainmail. Yeah.
We have more confidence in ourselves than Robert Griffin III. That's saying something.
Mm.
All right, stick around, guys. You have Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham. Nailed it. Coming up next, the Killer Bees from 12 to 3 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Peace.
Let's ride.
Let's ride.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.